They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise me.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, you're listening to Who Shot Ya? I'm your boy, it's your host, Ricky Carmona. Today, we do not have a special guest. It will just be the original three crew. Joining me in the studio, as always, she is the host of Switchblade Sisters podcast. It's sometimes it's known as an April. April Wolf. April, what's good with you?
So, Ricky, I was going to just say something music wise.
Okay.
But then I realized that I haven't said anything music wise because, and I'm a person who used to work at a record store and work as a DJ at a radio station, but I don't really listen to music that much, and it's very sad. But I realized that maybe I couldn't listen to music because I am stressed the fuck out all the time. And then I realized I started doing these bar three things, like 30 minutes in the daytime, and I'm like not as stressed out, guys. Like I can unclench my jaw and enjoy a song occasionally.
Explain to me what bar three is. I'm not familiar with
that. Do you ever hear like cardio bar stuff? Like it's usually a bunch of women who are standing at like a ballet bar doing cardio and hard shit.
Okay.
Really
hard shit. Oh, is bar like where you put your leg up on the bar? Like
sometimes
in
sometimes okay, you can. Other times it's just like straight up like burpees, but graceful burpees.
The best burpees.
Yeah. It is so hard that it makes you not think. Like there's nothing, you have to survive. Like I get into survival mode because it's so hard that I'm like, oh, okay, fine. I guess I'm okay now. But I listened to a song that I hadn't listened to or an album that I haven't listened to in so long because I stopped listening to sad music. But then I was like, I love sad music. I do. I love that sad, sappy shit that I used to listen to. And it's like this old indie album from Mojave 3 called Music for Travelers, I believe. And it is so sad, and it reminds me of, like, bittersweet Christmases. That's how sad it is.
Like, it just starts snowing all around you. When
it's snowing, and it's so beautiful, but it's just so, like, distraught. So everything is just terrible, but, God, it's beautiful out, you know? Like, that kind of feeling. Yeah. So if you guys want to listen, just, like, cool out and listen to some sad music, Neil Halstead and all the Mojave 3 folks doing Music for Travelers.
Okay, that's what's up.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully for this next hour, we can get you in a good ass goddamn mood.
Sure.
I worry about you sometimes, April. I look at your Twitter. I do, right? I'm gonna say a real talk, man. I look at your Twitter feed, and it's always something along the lines of this motherfucker who runs this business. And I'm always
Seriously.
Like, oh damn, April, it's gonna be okay.
That has been me since I was two. Like this is no different from any other time.
I feel like if you and I were friends and I'd be like, hey, let's go to Toys R Us, April would be like, the motherfuckers who run Toys R Us, before we go in there, they treat those giraffes like shit.
Shit is made in China.
That shit ain't even from here.
Well, I mean, hold on. The guys who own Toys R Us.
See what's up?
Here it comes.
Here we go. All right. I love it. The voice you heard right there is from my man, film reviews editor at The Wrap, El Mero Mero. Love Navidad. Looking. I love the talking head shirt today. Ladies and gentlemen, Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good with you?
My friend Tom gave me this shirt. It's one of the Elio shirts from Call Me By Your Name.
A word.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
What's good is it's Christmas in July. And y'all think I'm crazy, but I'll tell you, there are people in the podcast universe who do this 24/7, 365. Oof. Like my Santa hat is tipped. These folks are doing it and doing it right. There's a show called Tinseltown that I'm on this week, incidentally, just a little plug, talking about one of my favorites, the musical Scrooge. But there's also Tis the Podcast, Christmas Creeps, these guys year-round talking about Christmas movies and TV. Can't wait till Christmas is year-round, every month, talking about Christmas stuff. They've all got fun July stuff in the hopper, as do the usually seasonal podcasts, Christmas Past, and the granddaddy of them all, the Christmas Stocking Podcast, which came first. I follow these folks. I'm a fan. And I feel a little less insane when I realize that, like, I'm not the only person who's thinking about this stuff while it's 107 degrees outside.
Do you guys have conferences? And I don't mean SantaCon. I mean, like...
They have done some crossover stuff, but I'm not cool enough to be included, I guess. Because I don't... You know, it's funny. Years ago, when I did the book, my friend William Bibbiani's like, you should do a year-round Christmas movie podcast. And I was like, that's crazy. Who would listen to that? And now, like, there's three other shows doing it. And, like, I'm the idiot.
Hey, Ricky.
Hey, what?
What's good with you?
Oh, woo!
I'm telling you, my brain is clear. I've been doing that bar shit. <That's> Start remembering things like asking Ricky, what's good?
Oh, that was good. That one was natural as well. Like, I was genuinely surprised. I was like, oh, April has a question.
Nice flow.
Yep, that's what's up. I should also mention Alonzo's draped in Christmas lights right now, which is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, just every day, just if you guys didn't know.
I'm inside of a snow globe. Right?
Oh, what is good with me is, hey, how about that live show that we just recorded for Attack the Block? How dope was that?
That was a blast. Thank you to everybody who came out to that and to Travel Anderson from the LA Times.
Yep. Yeah, it was nice meeting people. Eugene, shout out. You introduced yourself. Hi.
Yep. That was just super fun. We got to meet podcast listeners who come out to the show. Should we come up with a name? This is just a question. Should we come up with a name for, like, who listens to our show?
Oh, I think they need to do that.
They need to do that. Okay. Yeah. All right. Because I was... Yeah.
What, shot putters? I don't know.
I don't know.
What that would be.
It's, I mean...
Shotties?
Just in the world we live today, guns are so aggressive and...
What about
I don't
want to
call
goodies?
Them shoot... Which what?
The what's goodies.
The what's goodies.
Well... You know what?
Sorry, that was so bad that I had to look down at my shoes. I truly did. I took a long pause and was just like, I didn't.
Look, y'all,
sorry.
Go to our Facebook page and start throwing around ideas, and whatever you guys come up with, we will abide by.
So far, I'm not against what's goodies, because as a fan of George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic, one of the greatest songs is All Your Goodies Are Gone. So my brain right away went to... All your goodies are gone.
And for our awesome, you know, Max Fun Drive supporters, our lapel pin says what's good with you.
It's a lapel pin now. I like that.
Oh, sorry, what is it, a badge? I forgot.
I just like that people are putting it on their lapel specifically. That makes me...
Their battle jacket gear, whatever the hell you're calling it.
Yeah.
Enamel badge, sorry.
Girl gain jean jacket or something.
That was such a dope show. And I get to the show that night, and prior to that, I had lost my sunglasses. And I get there, and I'm just hanging out backstage. And this one, the one dude who was running our tech, he comes up to me, and he gives me this pair of sunglasses right here. He's got Café Bustelo sunglasses.
Bright yellow, as they should be.
So good.
Not because he knew, like, I'm a fan or how much, like, I talk about on the show. He was just like, hey, there's an extra pair of these back here if you want to go, like, look silly with them on.
Yeah.
And I was like, you goddamn right I do.
That is serendipity right there.
So then, cut to me. I have terrible memory, just like you. Like, your mind is clear, April. Mine is not.
Okay.
So cut to me then, just like being at home and being like, "Damn, man, I used to have a pair of Café Bustelo sunglasses that I would rock all the time. It sucks that I lost those." So I go and put these away. Open up my closet. What's in there? My other pair of Bustelo glasses. Yo, I got two of these mugs now.
How many times has this happened, though? Because I'm imagining, like, you'll be like, oh, it's so weird. Maybe I did have another one. You open up your shoes. It's like, there's like some old box, and you're just like, oh, more of those. I forgot I had those.
I have the memento disease, but strictly about Café Bustelo products.
It's like that closet full of walnuts on the Dick Van Dyke Show. Just all these Bustelo sunglasses kind of cascading up.
So it feels so good to be rocking some sunglasses in that hot ass bright ass sun that is out there. That's what's good, yo. Oh, I am very excited about the movie that we are talking about on today's episode. We are talking about Boots Riley's Sorry to Bother You. We're also going to do a segment. We'll be making a top five list. And as always, we're going to have our staff picks. First, it is time for our news roundup game called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I care, though? Here's how it works. I made myself laugh.
You know, you go faster over It a Dick every week. But It a Dick is like a really great acronym. And I don't want it to just lose that.
It used to be that you would, like, pause and just do like a at the end. You know?
I would.
Yeah.
Which do you prefer? I hit the fast route or give it the
I like a little dwelling on this. Eat a dick.
Vary it up. Vary it, yeah.
Eat a dick. I used to do that, right? That's what I used to do.
That's what you used to do.
Well, it is our world-famous game, Eat a Dick. Short for, is this important? Do I care? And here's how it works. We're all going to read a news headline, and any one of us will jump in with our take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? I think I'll start off with this first one, if that's cool. Oh, there is some truly depressing news coming out of the Marvel Universe. According to Marvel Studios President Kevin Feige, not only did half of the humans die at the hand of Thanos at the end of Infinity War, but half of all animals, too. What the... Come on now. In a recent interview, Birth Movies Death reporter Russ Fisher asked Feige. Yeah, shout out to Birth Movies Death, yes.
Russ Fisher.
Do we know Russ?
Russ Fisher?
Oh, okay. Shout out to Russ Fisher.
Shout out to Russ.
Friend of the show. Friend of the show. Well, Russ asked Feige, are half the animals dead? Are half of the horses gone? Half of the ants? Feige responded with yes. Yes. All life. Is this important? Do you all care?
I bet you, Kevin Feige never thought about this until the moment that Russ asked him that question. Also, wasn't the point of the snapshot, if we're going to keep calling it that there were too many people and not enough resources? So don't the animals count as resources? Like, did he kill half the honeybees?
Mm-hmm.
Did he kill half of the delicious cows?
I mean,
that is such a self-serving, like, human-centric thing.
It's so easy sometimes.
if we would have seen, like, little tiny, like, ashes just, like, falling, like, oh, yeah, those are flies that are going away.
Yeah,
like,
it'd be all over. Like, right? Oh, an amoeba's gone.
and all life, are we including plants? Because that's, you know.
Yeah, we didn't. Plants, and I also think that plants can hear us and that they are... very smart.
Speaking of music, what are your thoughts on Stevie Wonder's Secret Life of Plants?
There we go.
I actually really like it.
And so does my philodendron.
Oh, that's great. Who wants to take this next one here?
Oh, I think April should.
Oh, I should.
Mm. Oh, I was just like, is it about women? Oh, yes, it is. This is a fun one. This I've been waiting to talk about. So the new Roe v. Wade film is in trouble. You guys all know about the Roe v. Wade film, I'm assuming. According to the Daily Beast, the producers Nick Loeb and Kathy Allen deliberately kept the true nature of the movie secret from the people working on it. Oh, I wonder why. The movie follows the historic Supreme Court case, but with a pro-life and anti-choice slant, and or just completely fucking made up. On the first day of shooting, the original director quit along with the first AD. Crew members walked out, locations were lost, and the actor set to play Jane Roe quit. Other cast members who are still attached to the film are John Voight, Tommy Lauren, or what are her other names? Tiny Luscious, Tammy, Milo Yiannopoulos, and Steve Guttenberg. Is this important? Do you care?
This list of names that you just read here, what I care about is have we lost Steve Guttenberg to the dark side?
I think Steve Guttenberg's quote was met. Just a hunch. I'm thinking like they met his quote and he showed up and he's like, what am I doing?
I got the call and ready
to work.
The numbers match and the check cleared. Yeah. Let's roll.
Someone listed him as, like in one of the articles, they did say like he's a conservative actor. And I was just like, maybe I just never knew.
Wow.
I mean, I know that John Voight's a total dick.
Yes.
Yes, I've heard that.
And Jamie Kennedy signed on too. There's a long list of actors. Like Jamie Kennedy, someone was talking about Scream 2 the other day and Randy, and I was just like, I just can't stop thinking about Roe v. Wade.
Steve Guttenberg was in Can't Stop the Music, and that's a gay classic.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, people change, not always for the better.
That's true.
This is something we learned.
So this whole movie basically exists because Sofia Vergara's ex-boyfriend is mad that she wouldn't give him her embryos or something?
Yeah, and he won. He won that case in Louisiana. So that means that he owns a bunch of her embryos and can do whatever he wants. So that means that he can force someone to have the child that came from her eggs. So she would just have children, and she has no say in whether or not the child exists.
Why were they his? When they were together,
they fertilized some and they put them in like the freeze storage thing.
Okay.
And then she wanted them taken away. She was like, "We're not together anymore, and this is, you know, we should not have children." And so he was just like,
"No." He sued for them.
Yeah, I'm going to sue you, and I get to own them, and I get to keep them, which meant that he would get to have any children that he wanted with her.
Why?
Paging Aunt Lydia.
My guy's so dumb. Mm. Why are people... We're crazy. That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
Well, good on Tulane for kicking them off campus. I hear this,
they did.
I hear this script is just vomitous.
Yeah, I like that this director was like, "Nah, man, I'm out. No, thank you." The crew members, shout out to them. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah, people are speaking out, and they're just like, I think it's a good reminder that, like, most of the country has different feelings from a lot of people who are in charge, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up with one more piece of my dorky-ass world here.
Yeah.
The always outspoken James Gunn has something to say about movie spoilers. The Guardians of the Galaxy director took to Twitter this week to announce, quote, "If a movie can be ruined by spoilers, it's not a good movie," end quote. This created some waves with many people pushing back. One Twitter user asked about Infinity War, to which Gunn replied, "I don't think Infinity War is ruined by spoilers. Is this important? Do you care?"
I think the word spoiler gets overused.
Yes.
Because people act like any bit of information is a spoiler.
Yeah.
I also think that he's wrong because, like, The Sixth Sense is a good movie.
That's like
totally.
One of the few.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for the most part, sure. You can't spoil, you know, Rosebud was his sled, you know.
Right.
But, like,
what? I'm only halfway through.
But there are times where, you know, like, yeah, you don't want it spoiled. But yeah, he's right for the most part, I guess. If it is a truly great film, there's other things going on than just the plot revelations.
As I say on Switchblade Sisters.
Ah, yes.
It's not what happens, but how it happens that makes a movie worth watching. So I obviously have some agreement with him. And I do believe it's not every movie, but a vast, vast number.
Sure,
large
majority.
Vast majority would be.
When Dave talks about what happens in bad movies, he goes, "That's not a spoiler, it's a selling point."
I have a bad habit of, like, reacting to things that I consider spoilers that aren't really spoilers, mm-hmm. where it's just like, "Oh, yeah, I saw this movie and Jimmy Smith was in it. Whoa, hey, bro, why you gonna tell me Jimmy Smith is in this movie, dog?" It's like, "Oh, my bad. Look at that."
There is something, and it's harder and harder to do these days, but to walk into a movie and know nothing about it is so great. That's one of the things I love about going to film festivals. Mm. You know, if I've managed not to see the trailer or read anything about it, like, I walked into The Shape of Water last fall with no clue what it was about, and it was like, "Whoa, okay,
that's amazing."
Yeah, it's like that's a really great thing, and they conspire to make that harder. Like, trailers give away too much, and, you know, all this, you know, it's always casting news, and even if, like, the poster half the time is telling you stuff you don't want to know.
Yeah.
So I'm a fan of Tabula Rasa, but he's right. People get too many conniptions about spoilers.
Yeah. Well, the movie that we're going to talk about on today's episode, there's. Boots Riley has said, like, don't mention what happens at one point in the movie. There's things get interesting in the movie.
There's a switcheroo.
Sci-fi twist.
Yeah. So I think we might be talking a little bit about spoilers even more when we get back in our further discussion. We're going to be talking about Sorry to Bother Y'all. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll do that.
Maximum Fun's new sci-fi comedy podcast, Bubble, is coming to San Diego Comic-Con on July 21st. At 1 p.m., Bubble cast members Travis McElroy, Cristela Alonso, Eliza Skinner, Allison Becker, Mike Mitchell, Jordan Morris, and Danielle Radford will be signing autographs. Tickets are required, but free. Then at 5 p.m., the cast will participate in a panel moderated by Jesse Thorne, held at the San Diego Central Library. For more information, visit MaximumFun.org/SDCC.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
April Wolf.
Alonzo Duralde.
Today we are talking about Sorry to Bother You. Alonzo, if you could...
God.
Yes, sir. You know, you knew it was happening. Can you give us a brief...
They're not going to ask me to do that. Are you serious?
It was a four-hour episode when we asked April to listen up.
So, then...
Side note, no, okay. All right, so Lakeith Stanfield stars as Cassius Green, who is underemployed, and he gets a job as a telemarketer. At first, it's not going very well, but then a coworker played by Danny Glover advises him, use your white voice. Mm. And it is such a hit with his clients that he gets kicked upstairs to the power callers, only to find out that the company where he's working... The power callers are involved with some rather nefarious stuff involving a large corporation run by the very cokey Armie Hammer. Meanwhile, Cassius has a girlfriend who's an artist named Detroit, played by Tessa Thompson, who, on the one hand, hates it when he does the white voice, but she, too, is capable of code switching when she feels like it. And it culminates in a... In a twist we're not supposed to talk about.
Spoiler. Hashtag spoiler. No, that's about right. I just what did we think of the film?
No, you go first.
Yeah.
You go first.
I didn't see it at Sundance, but at Sundance, people were like losing their minds about it. And you always have to kind of temper that because people like to lose their minds at Sundance, and it doesn't necessarily always translate to sea level. So I saw it finally, like in the last couple of weeks. I like it a lot. I think it's a movie that is bursting with ideas, maybe even too many. It has a raggedy kind of energy where even if it's not the slickest and smoothest narrative, it's angry and it's funny and it's sharp and it's naming names and it's pointing fingers and it's it reminded me of like Dave and I were talking about. It was like when The Living End came out in the early 90s. You know, Greg Araki's movies are very kind of raw and, you know, Godard inspired, but he was doing this really like angry, sexy, queer movie about AIDS and anger and stuff in a period that nobody was doing that. And so that was exciting. And so for all the things that in this movie that I think are kind of a mess or don't quite come together, I love its energy and I love its passion and I love everything that it's about and wanting to say. But at the same time, I feel like people are going nuts about how great it is. I'm like, hey, it's a first film, and it's a messy first film, and can we just love it for that and not, like, crown Boots Riley the king of the cinematic universe?
I would agree with that 100%. That when you posted your review online and you said April and I might deem you...
Under-enthusiastic.
Yes. My fear is with this movie is that we keep telling people. I've tempered myself since then a bit of this being like, oh man, this is the movie that will change everything, and it's like this is a really great goddamn movie.
Yeah.
And I love everything that it's trying to do. You compared it to The Living End. To me it feels very much of I'm going back to Parliament Funkadelic, like their album Maggot Brain, where it's just this world that George Clinton creates that is like. There's songs that are just, like, very, like, gospel-influenced. And then you go to, like, this crazy, like, hardcore, just, like, strong guitar rock. Like, the movie just takes these turns like that where now we're in this kind of world and now we're in this kind of world. I love that. That speaks to me 100%. Is that going to speak to a motherfucker in Ohio? I don't know, you know, but I want that motherfucker in Ohio to watch the movie.
Totally.
And I think it's important to see this movie. I think it's a real important movie. I will say, I mean, April, the way you've talked about it, just coming at it from like it being like a pro-union movie. See, like
it's an anti-corporatist film for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I need to watch it. Today was the second time I watched it. I need to see it more so I can put myself in the mindset of that. Right now, I still am processing it on the kind of like musical and also just being a fan of Boots Riley, knowing how much he enjoys George Clinton and just music of that era. Like to me, the music just like the movie just lives in that world.
I think, you know, for me, I would agree that there are some ragged points. You know, I've seen it twice and the editing is it's a little bit shaky sometimes. You know, there's some gags, some things that don't always work out because it might be a little bit slow in the editing, or it might be like the wrong point to cut on. And, you know, that's whatever. That's a first feature kind of thing. But I think one of the reasons why, you know, people like me were so excited about this movie coming out is because it is one of the few that actually does want to tackle corporatism. And a lot of people don't want to bite the hand that feeds them. And so that's one of those things that you get where indie filmmakers actually don't usually want to do something because they want to get higher up. They want to get that money.
They want the and Disney make those, gig.
They want that Disney gig. And I think that it's so refreshing to see a movie from someone who doesn't necessarily have those ambitions, who has a career outside of this, and who is capable of saying these things and making that. And so for me, I was just like, thank you for filling a void, because independent film has been doing something kind of weird the past however 20 years or something, slowly creeping up where, you know, Hollywood's kind of plucking these directors. People just aren't taking those chances. I remember when I saw this at Sundance, Amazon was buying up films, right? So Amazon's there and they're buying up films. And I was just like, oh, shit, are they going to buy Sorry to Bother You? Is this going to be available to be, like, distributed? Because there are some clear, like, cutting things happening, taking shots at Jeff Bezos and the Elon Musks of the world.
Right. Although it was purchased by Annapurna, which
is
basically
yes.
like, you know, the studio paid for by what, Intel or what is her father?
Her dad, yeah. Who does her dad work? Who is Megan Ellison's dad?
Some big company.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's just like, the money has to come from somewhere.
Sure. Yeah.
And we all know. And I think that there is that kind of knowledge in his film, too. He's just like, you know, his character, you know, Cash.
Is Cash Green? I love that line so much.
he has to make money to help save his uncle's house.
Yeah. Right.
Like there are he can't just like be a communist or a socialist.
Oh,
like
no,
he exists
yeah.
within
I'm
the
not,
world.
I'm not
and
knocking the movie for taking the deal
from
Annapurna.
No,
I'm just saying
I don't think
just,
you are. Yeah, yeah, I don't think you are, but it's a weird balance of self awareness and also criticism and kind of knowing, you know, the visual gags. I saw this the second time, a bunch of stuff that I didn't see the first time. And I was just like, there's just a lot of depth there that I just.
The picture of a visual gag I loved is the picture of. Who is it? Like
the father?
The father, yeah, who keeps like changing.
Yeah, that's like a Marx Brothers gag.
That's
like a Bugs Bunny joke.
It
I
is,
love
yeah.
that.
He's like kicking his heels up.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much.
Did anybody else see the first Purge this week?
No, I still haven't seen it.
Because I'll tell you, I think that the first Purge belongs in the conversation with this film and with Blindspotting about like where we are right now and where we've been in terms of how this country deals with black people. I've not been a giant fan of the Purge series up until now, but this one is really on point about like the government doing things to the inner city to make people kill each other.
Yeah.
Is that Purge movie, is there a jump in time happening?
Or
is this
prequel.
A jump?
It's a prequel
to
yeah.
it.
It's the first
Marissa
one.
Marissa Tomei.
Yeah.
Marissa,
really?
She's the person who invents the whole thing, although she does it in a scientific way and the government, you know, exploits it. But yeah, it's all set in this, you know, it's all on Staten Island. It's like the first year they do this kind of experiment, mostly in this housing project. And they very much kind of parallel the idea of like, here's the government bringing in guns and bringing in drugs and doing things to sort of like commit urban genocide, basically.
Huh. Shout out to Staten Island. The weird like kind of conspiracy thought of my brain when I saw like a little bit of the trailer to it, I actually was like, are they just trying to like make money on the success of Get Out? It just felt I don't know, something about it gave me like the wrong vibe of like, why is this movie all full of black people now? Because Get Out was some shit.
No, I think it's because if you follow horror movies, black people in America are a huge audience for horror movies, and I think that they're just like finally figuring out.
And Blumhouse has been making these all along, who also made Get Out.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like, I think they finally looked at their demographics and were just like, oh, we have to service our audience.
I think
that that's probably what it is.
I hope so. I mean, I hope, again, that's conspiracy Ricky, who I like to let out every once in a while.
Yeah, like Gerard McMurray, who directed it, did that Netflix movie Burning Sands. about the black fraternity thing. And then, you know, it's got a really great cast, including Lex Scott Davis, who's also in Superfly, which nobody went to see
Great.
But yeah, I just think it's a... When I saw it not long after seeing Sorry to Bother You, I was like, oh, this is like people aren't going to pair these movies together, but they really are part of a wave, I think, that's happening right now, just in very different genres and, you know, being considered differently by critics. But they're all pushing the same points, which is very exciting.
Yeah. And when Blindspotting comes out, that shit is good.
Can you guys tell me about Blindspotting? I'm not familiar with I've seen it pop up on my internet a little bit here and there.
It's Rafael Casal who co-wrote it with David Diggs, and they are best friends from Oakland in real life, and both verse poets and
is he in rappers. Hamilton?
David Diggs is Hamilton.
Yeah, okay.
Right. I think he's gone from that now since he's doing other projects.
Yeah. But that was his thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So this is his debut feature lead.
And, okay.
He was the nice teacher in Wonder, if you saw that.
Yeah. And this has been in production for like 10 years.
Okay.
So they've been kind of writing it as the city of Oakland has been changing. And it's about, you know, a white friend and a black friend who grew up together in West Oakland as things change. And it deals with race in really, really, really interesting ways. Because Rafa's character, Miles, is very much more of like the hood dude. Like, he speaks with like the hood accent. He's definitely more ingrained, and I would say, in that culture. And then David Diggs's character, who is black, is not as much. And mm-hmm. So you have these two things butting up against each other, just like, is he co-opting this culture? Is he not? You know, like, it's a brilliant film. It's so beautiful.
That one I did see at Sundance. And I think, again, it's that thing. This is a thing I find a lot of times with first filmmakers. It's what I call the every note card on the bulletin board. Like, every idea they ever had, they want to put in a movie, they're just going to, I might not get a second movie. It's all going
exactly.
in here. So Blindspotting is kind of overflowing with stuff as well. There's some great stuff in there. There's some kind of hacky material as far as like the gentrification jokes are a little, you know, like Whole Foods, you know.
Huh.
It's definitely a movie where you can tell the two lead guys wrote it because they give themselves all the best dialogue. But yes, there's a lot of smart stuff and a lot of very pointed commentary about like police violence and about. Yeah, it is interesting that you have this character who is sort of like deep hood Oakland and is white. And then you have these kind of like white, you know, tech gentrify types who are like putting on, like, they're getting his tattoo and they're using his patois. And it's like, no, you don't get to. But then it's like, but do I even get to, because I'm white, you know? So
sure.
I think as with this movie, I think got a little overpraised, has things wrong with it, but it's an exciting first feature and people should totally see
it. Yeah, Carlos Estrada, I think, directed, and this is the thing I like about Blindspotting similar or a different way than Sorry to Bother You, Blindspotting is from theater artists. And so there's kind of an embrace of cheesiness there. And that's something that I, you know, like, it's just endearing in a way that you're like, oh, you're really going to put the heart on the sleeve for everything. And Sorry to Bother You, I think, has moments like that, too. They filmed at the exact same time in Oakland across, like, not too far away from each other. Like, no one ever films in Oakland.
Oakland is, like, the spot right now.
It's having a renaissance.
Black Panther, Blindspotting, which you're speaking of.
And Black Panther was not filmed in Oakland, I should say.
At all?
Yeah, it was...
What?
It was filmed in the South.
False Flag.
It was in Georgia.
Damn.
Well, yeah. Well, Atlanta doubles for a lot of stuff in that movie, because, like, the British Museum where Killmonger steals the vibranium, that's, like, the High Museum of Art in Atlanta.
Yeah, it is.
Is there a reason that you think that people are right now attracted to Oakland so much in films, other than maybe that it's just like these
Oakland
talented?
Oakland has created some of the most talented, interesting people. When I lived there, it was some of the best times of my life with the artists there. It is exactly what you would call, quote unquote, multicultural, and it has been for an extremely long time. And politics and rap and music are so woven into like the everyday life of the people who live in Oakland that it has an undeniable energy, and that's the kind of thing I think that we're looking for in this weird, turbulent time, is this, you know, like grassroots activism melded with art, and the people of Oakland just already have that. It's in their lives and in their culture. Right.
Shout out to E-40. He's out here trying to function. Shout out to Too Short, Money in the Ghetto. Shout out to Hammer, proper.
It's like the West Coast Brooklyn in that it's this like richly historical and fascinating area that is being ruined by rich white people.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, who knows if it will be there in the future. Yeah. No one knows. They've been preserving it for as long as they could, but things are changing.
Can we talk about how amazing Tessa Thompson is in this movie?
Oh, yes.
Sorry to bother you.
She's a delight.
Right?
And I love that she's out of the closet now. That's so exciting.
She loves who she wants to love. Yes. Whatever she wants to love.
Whatever.
And my niece has already bought a pair of murder, 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 kill, kill, kill earrings.
I mean, her hair, those earrings. She has.
She can flip a sign.
Right, there are sign flipping
so
skills,
good.
Yo. She has two of my favorite moments in movies this year. In Annihilation, the kind of like her final scene in Annihilation, when she walks away from Natalie Portman, and in Sorry to Bother You. She has this art piece that she's doing.
Yes.
Set to motherfucking Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon, yo.
Yes.
I mean, come on. I threw my panties at the screen. You know what I'm saying? I was like, that's what's up. That's what's up.
Lakeith Stansfield's white voice is David Cross, mm-hmm. and her white voice is Lily James.
Is that who it was? Okay.
Yes. Oh, I was wondering who that was.
And Mr. Blank's is Patton Oswalt. And I think Danny Glover's is Steve Buscemi, but I'm not sure.
It is. It's Steve Buscemi.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it was. Oh. That one took me a second to get. On the second listen, I was just like, oh, that's Steve. That's Steve. And we should also say that I love Kate Berlant, and that she has a very small role in this as Diana Debocherry.
Debocherry. It looks like debauchery.
It's Debocherry. And she's really fun. She's also on this week's episode of Switchblade Sisters.
Oh,
what a coincidence.
But I love seeing her in that because, you know, like local LA folks, revered LA folks showing up in a movie. It's nice.
Hell yeah.
And stealing some show time.
That's what's up. That's what's up. Well, what did we all think? What people should they stream this movie? Should they screen this movie? Should they skip it?
Go see it with a bunch of friends. Mm-hmm. Go out and, like, wear a really aggressive T-shirt. And then have some beers and listen to E-40.
Yes.
Like, fucking just do it.
Yes.
Yeah, go see it. Screen it. This is an arrival of an exciting young filmmaker. But, like, again, don't believe too much of the hype.
Don't expect it to be perfect is what
yes.
I should say.
Absolutely.
Don't expect it to be perfect.
It you know, I'm going to get my sports metaphor all wrong. It shoots for the fences, and it gets most of the way there. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a mixed one.
Fine.
No, but I get it. I get what you're saying.
It takes some very big, like, bold chances, and a lot of them land, and some of them, the movie doesn't quite have the, it's a check that the movie can't cash.
Sure.
But good on you for trying.
Yeah,
you know?
I would say it's like a great first season of television. Mm. When you go back and you watch a show like 10 years later and you watch that first season, you're like, okay, I could see where it was like a little rough here, but they knew, they had a vision for what they wanted to do and they're going in like a very specific direction.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I would say, like April said, go with some people, spend some money on it, screen it. Then afterwards, go home, listen to My Favorite Mutiny. Listen to Laugh, Love, Fuck, yo. Listen to Show Your Ass. Listen to Dig It.
Or if you're in Oakland, go to the layover and then just dance the night away.
That's what's up, yo. See? All right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to be doing our own version of Top 5, the Who Shot Your Top 5, y'all. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is J. Keith Van Stratton, host of Go Fact Yourself here on the Maximum Fun Network. On Go Fact Yourself, we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb.
Paul, by the way, how much do you know about chicken husbandry?
You gotta give him that grain.
All right.
Gotta give him that grain.
And then smart again.
What future Hall of Fame pitcher for the Cleveland Indians became the first active player to enlist?
Bob Feller.
Oh, okay.
We've got me, co-host Helen Hong, plus celebrity guests and actual surprise experts. In the coming weeks, you can hear guests like Maria Bamford, Tom Bergeron, Paul F. Tompkins, Janet Varney, and Grant Imahara. And if you're in the New York area, come check us out live. We're doing two shows there on July 21st and July 22nd. Go to GoFactorPod.com for tickets and more. We'll see you in New York, or on the first and third Friday of every month here on the Maximum Fun Network.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I am your host, Ricky Carmona, and joining me in the studio today are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
April Wolf.
Today we're trying out a new segment called Top 5. As you may already know, we here at Who Shot Ya? We are a bunch of movie professionals. Alonzo and April are. I am not. I just like to holla. And with that knowledge, we are going to put together the ultimate top five list in a given category. The only rules with this are, once the list is made, it is the ultimate list that can never be questioned. Number two, April's already, I'm against it. I get final say, April.
That's the part I'm against.
So we're going to be making our top five directorial debuts. Alonzo, should we start with you? Yeah, Alonzo...
Okay, well, this list has to include what was, is, and I think will always be the greatest feature film directorial debut of all time.
Wow. Coming in hot.
Orson Welles' Citizen Kane. Oh. Call me bougie, but come on.
That's a good movie.
That's a guy who, like, had an idea or two.
Mm-hmm.
That movie totally holds up. That movie... plays around with cinematic language and creates cinematic language. And, you know, I mean, fed off of a lot of influences from, you know, John Ford to German Expressionism. But at the same time, like, is just, it's exciting and it's vital. Of the sort of, you know, broccoli movies that you're sort of expected to watch, like in film school or, you know, when you're the great films of all time, it's fun. Like, it's funny. The jokes are still funny. And the drama is still, you know, it's still moving and it matters. And, you know, it's about, you know, Welles in his first two films, like, tackles the media and the automotive industry, which are like two of the linchpins of, like, America, basically. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's a movie I go back and watch. I rewatch it every year. I always find new things. I think it's thrilling. So, yeah, as trite as it sounds, Citizen Kane, got to be on the list.
A predictable first one to throw
fight
out there.
Fight me.
I won't fight you. I won't at you. It passed the test for me in college of, I took one of those, like, film
surveys.
Classes. And that was – Citizen Kane was the one movie that I did not fall asleep in.
Well,
It was one where I was like, oh, yeah, I'm actually kind of into this.
April, what do you got?
Paul Haggis's Crash. Just kidding. Casey Lemon's Eve's Bayou.
Love it. Love it.
And, you know, she didn't do a ton of directing work after that. She was still working as an actor, and now she's doing more TV directing and stuff, and I think she has some film projects that she's reviving. So I'm very excited to see some follow-ups.
Her second movie, Caveman's Valentine, is nutty but really good.
It's something that I watched and didn't like, but I could see the parts of the director that I enjoyed. Do you know what I mean?
Her voice.
Yeah, I can see a voice that I'm interested in, but I wasn't interested in that. But Eve's Bayou, to me, for a debut, is like, it is an enduring classic. You know, how the fuck did she make that?
God. Oh, I love that movie so
much. Yeah, it's great.
Is Lynn Whitfield in that joint?
I don't remember.
Yes.
I think so.
I don't know.
I like my Lynn Whitfield back in the day.
What about you, Ricky?
So I get to throw out one as well? Why not? Warren. Well, then I will go with I will follow Alonzo's lead and just go with the obvious first time movie. Even though there's parts of it that have not aged well, but he is kind of like course correcting them on his Netflix series. I'll say Spike Lee's She's Gotta Have It.
Nice.
I mean, without that movie, would we have more movies from Spike after that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he's.
I am old enough that I saw that movie in the theater when it came out, and I remember how exciting that was. And I think that, you know, when you look at sort of the mainstream black cinema that emerged in the years after that, where you had movies like, you know, Juice and mm-hmm. So much of that was because, like, there were some black directors, but nobody was really talking about it as a thing. And, like, Spike Lee brought that level of interest and a lived experience and a personal point of view to these movies that made it possible for then other filmmakers, you know, like, why am I blanking on everyone's name right now?
Some other guy.
The other one. The other dude. Old boy.
That works.
The Boys in the Hood old guy. Boy. Why am I John Singleton. John Singleton. Like, people like that to emerge. Like, he totally opened a lot of doors.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I saw She's Gotta Have It, like, after I had seen Do the Right Thing. But it made, like, and even then, like, I wasn't that, like, movie savvy. I could just tell. I was like, this is different. This is cool. It's all black people, which is just something that wasn't ever. And it's in black and white, too. Yeah. I mean, you don't get high school kids to, like, sit down and watch black and white movies, at least not back then when I was growing up. So it was just like, all right, yeah, motherfuckers got it, yo. That's what's up. Hey, well, who should go next here? April, let's go to you here.
I mean, we were just talking about Joan Micklyn Silver. Mm. So, I mean, Hester Street, I think, was her debut.
Hell yeah.
And that's insane that she made Hester Street for her first film.
Yeah.
So definitely put Hester Street
on that
shit.
Do you know this movie, Ricky?
Can you guys tell my blank expression? I have no idea what
you're
talking about.
That's great, but then we get to tell you about it. Yeah.
Carol Kane was nominated for Best Actress.
Okay.
And it is about the sort of Orthodox Jewish community in New York in, like, the 19-teens,
yeah.
I guess? And it's basically about this guy who, it's an arranged marriage, but he winds up leaving his wife for another woman. And, you know, but then the wife, the abandoned wife, winds up sort of creating a life of her own as well. Almost the entire film is in Yiddish, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has a real sort of, like, kind of sepia look to it. It's like, it's in color, but in a very sort of old photograph, you know. Kind
like, she
of
did
way.
A style with that. Like, yeah. She burst out and was just like, no, I'm doing a Yiddish film.
It's going to look like
weird.
And what year was this that it came out?
75, I think.
Yeah, early, yeah. mid-70s.
Yeah. Mm. Joan Micklyn Silver does not get the due she has deserved as, like, you know, independent American cinema, like, let's say after Cassavetes became a big deal and before Sundance. That's like people talk about Hollywood in the 70s and how that's when we were making all these daring films and stuff. But to be indie in the 70s, I think a lot of people were doing cool stuff that we don't talk about enough. And top of my list is Joan Micklyn Silver. I think she's one of those. It drives me nuts that, like, she's going to die one day and then suddenly everybody's going to be like, oh, yeah, Joan Micklyn Silver. She was so important. It's like, no, let's talk about that now while she's alive.
She's around now, it turns out.
Yeah, like, let's have some retrospectives. Let's kiss her ass while she's living, please.
That's like Betty Gordon. So too. Betty Gordon, yes. I think, doesn't get enough.
Totally.
What
Variety?
Variety was her first film,
I think,
wasn't
so,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, put fucking Variety on the list. it's like a quintessential New York film, but through a female character, which never happens.
Yeah.
It never happens. It's always like dudes in the 80s that we get.
Does Joan Micklyn Silver, did she ever have like a breakout hit?
Well, Crossing Delancey was a big, that was a big Warner Brothers
I
movie.
I can't remember
Amy
that.
Irving
yeah.
and Peter Riegert.
Right.
And, that was a biggie. She directed Loverboy with Patrick Dempsey. Not her greatest moment, but, you know.
But she'll take it.
It was
but
a paying gig.
Make that paper.
Speaking of female directors, I got to give it up for Rose Trochet for Go Fish, which was, you know, in the new queer cinema, I think really kind of, it was a, in the same way, not just because they're both in black and white, but in the same way that She's Gotta Have It felt like a kind of black film we hadn't seen before, but in a very kind of funny, urban, you know, smart, sexy kind of way. Go Fish, I think, is the She's Gotta Have It of lesbian movies.
Mm. Yeah, and we recommended Go Fish. You did for the Who Shot You for
right.
Pride Month.
Yep. Yeah. So, and that's a movie that I just think it has these kind of fun little art school flourishes to it, but for the most part, it's just this really sharply observed comedy about this group of women and their relationships and, you know, dating and all this kind of stuff. And you know, I remember, again, seeing that movie in the early 90s. I was like, I know people like this, and I never see them in movies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is that was so thrilling to look at.
All right. Okay, we have five here. See, I'm not a hater, and I like what this list looks like right now.
Turns out people make good movies.
It's true.
But I fully believe, and I think that we see this in both, you know, we talked a little bit about Blindspotting too, but we see this definitely in Sorry to Bother You, that there's something about filmmakers. They always tell you your first feature, you know, go hard because you may not get another chance to sure. say what you want on the screen. So you need to put all that spaghetti and throw it on the wall and you see what sticks and just like, just go kitchen sink everything because it is your heart and it should be you on the screen.
Oh, yeah. God. Allison Anders' Gas Food Lodging.
Fucking amazing.
All right. Yeah. The list is closed.
I don't want to close the list.
The list is closed. Everybody listening, go and watch all of these movies that we have just told you.
High. That was a first film.
I can't believe that that was a first film. She's so good.
Oh, you watch Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You know, since we're in the movie sharing mode, how about we give everybody our staff picks every week? We give out our staff picks. We recommend movies to you that you can watch streaming in the theater platforms, what have you. April, what do you think people should check out?
It's actually a first feature, and it's Bo Burnham's
Damn
Eighth
it.
Grade. I'm sorry.
That was going to be mine, but go
sorry.
Ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade is something that hit me in my chest, and I have not been able to lose it. And it is essentially a movie about anxiety, but told through a 13-year-old girl. And it is... it's a beautiful film, and it's tough to believe sometimes that a 27-year-old man was able to do this, but I think Bo Burnham was able to really just put humanity into this girl. She is just a stand-in for all of humanity, all people who felt anxious in a group who have never felt like they belonged. And it's also funny and sweet, and this lead actor, Elsie Fisher, is... she is a fully formed actor. You know what I mean? Like those people that just start, like when Kirsten Dunst started acting in like an Interview with a Vampire, and you're like, oh shit, that is an
actor. They're
gonna
be stars.
The Fannings, yeah.
Yeah, and then you look at her and you're like, oh my God, this is an actor. So Elsie Fisher, you have to see this movie. I think it's really fun.
It's so great.
And I also I've filled in for Jesse Thorne on Bullseye while he was on vacation, and I got to interview Bo Burnham for that. So there's gonna be an interview with me and him on Bullseye soon.
Yes.
And, you know, I remember Bo Burnham being like a YouTube, like, goofy comedy kid.
Yeah, he wishes that you would forget it.
Really? No, I think that's amazing.
He does.
I feel like he's the first important artist to come out of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I would argue you're correct. Yes.
Yeah.
He directed Chris Rock's last stand-up special. He directed Tambourine.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
wow.
It's great.
Yeah. So,
it's really great.
Yeah, go see Eighth Grade. It brought up anxiety in me that I haven't thought about since Welcome to the Dollhouse.
Yes. tapped in, and I love Todd Solondz, it tapped into it in a kinder way.
I was going to say, but in a movie that doesn't hate everyone in the universe.
Yeah, yeah. I still love that one, though. Still.
Well, since April took my staff pick.
So sorry. I just wanted to plug the Bullseye thing, too.
No, no.
I saw what you were doing there.
That's
thank you.
Well done.
And since y'all are talking about Skyscraper next week without me, because I will be at Outfest, my pick will be Hotel Transylvania 3.
Oh, whoa.
All right.
Okay.
If I had my way, Adam Sandler would make Hotel Transylvania movies and then, like, you know, he could do Paul Thomas Anderson and Noah Baumbach. Apparently he's in the Nick Safdie Brothers movies. So, like, those movies and nothing else. Like, no more of these stupid Netflix movies, nothing else that has, like, you know, David Spade or, you know, his usual crew of goons in them. But these Hotel Transylvania movies are so charming and funny and just, like, it's Genndy Tartakovsky who did, you know, Dexter's Laboratory and Samurai Jack. And so they're visually just... fun, and they pop with crazy ideas and weird physical comedy, and it's just these fun monsters hanging out and going on vacation. And
well, that's nice.
I was thoroughly I've enjoyed all three of them, and this one is a stitch. So Hotel Transylvania 3.
Hotel Transylvania 3. That's what's up.
Colon summer vacation.
That was
it.
Oh, I love that. I love it.
I'm recommending a movie that. I enjoyed this movie. I'm not familiar with this dude's work, but you all probably are because you're smart motherfuckers. I watched this Fellini movie called Knights of Cabiria.
Woo!
We went back in time, yo.
Cabiria, I think.
Cabiria. See, that's... And it was so goddamn good. It's really great. Have you seen this, April?
I haven't. No, about? I'm understudied on Fellini.
Okay, yeah. I don't think I've seen. I think this might have been my first Fellini experience, and it was great. We had talked a while ago about movies. We were talking about international movies, and I said that I had watched that movie, The Dreamers. Do you guys remember that movie, The Dreamers?
Oh, the Bertolucci movie about Paris in 68?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this one kind of felt like it was in that same world of, like, we're going to meet these group of characters, and we're just going to kind of, like, hang out with them and, like, follow them for X amount of days or, you know, however much time passes. There's a little bit of a plot in this movie, I feel like. I mean, she's... But for the most part, you're just, like, following this girl's life in these, like, these little kind of, like, I don't even want to say they're adventures. these little vignettes that they get in. But she is amazing.
Yeah, Julieta Messina.
Like, I could watch her fucking, like, eat cereal all day. It's so goddamn great. There's, like, these little, there's one moment that's kind of, like, at the end of, like, JFK where, like, Kevin Costner, like, looks at the camera. She has a moment where she looks at the camera, and I was like, my girl, that's what's up. I see you, too. I see you, too. Just a really cool story. It's in Italian. That shit sounds dope.
Yeah, listen to it.
I was a big fan of that, y'all. Look at me trying to, like, learn this shit, watching international movies.
Ricky.
Yes?
They made a musical of it.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Sweet Charity, the Bob Fosse musical, is based on Knights of
Cabiria. Oh, it's Bob Fosse, though? Oh, that's good, then.
Actually, the movie of Sweet Charity is not great. Like, even Fosse was sort of like, I don't think he got final cut.
Okay, it's not good then, Ricky. It's not good.
But it is just, it all connects.
Oh, well.
But yeah, Knights of Cabiria, that's a great one.
Well, don't ruin my Night of Cabiria with your musical.
If you ever get to see it on stage, you might want to, you know, because the show is great, and that's where Hey Big Spender comes from.
Hey, Big Spender.
Wait, no, sorry. I'm getting confused. That's actually from Damn Yankees. It's where if they could see me now.
If my friends could see me now.
Yeah, that's from Sweet Charity.
Guys, I love musicals. I've been fucking with you the whole time. next week, we are going to be talking about Skyscraper with music supervisor and Heat Rock's host, Morgan Rhodes. Andrea Clark will be in the building. The Dope Rhymes there. Alonzo, you won't be here. Where will you be at, Alonzo?
I will be at Outfest Los Angeles, the LGBTQ Film Festival. If you're in L.A., it will have started on the 12th, but it's running through the 22nd. Great stuff. Outfest.org. Come check it out.
It's like widely considered like one of the best queer fests around in the nation, right?
It is.
Yes. Yes, we should definitely say that.
Say that shit. Wait, can I promote a show that I'm doing right now? I have a show on Friday night, if you're in Los Angeles here, at the Pack Theater on Santa Monica Boulevard. It's called Your Late Night Show.
Friday the 13th.
Indeed. Yo, let's come out and get murked by Jason. It's a monthly talk show that they do. It's written. It's written fresh every month, and they bring in a rotating guest this month. They have chosen me for some goddamn reason to host this mug.
Yeah.
And I have my guest will be Dave Lyons. He's the creator of Yacht Rock. Y'all are familiar with Yacht Rock?
Oh, I know Dave.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. Word. The Yacht Rock folks are from Michigan. A lot of them are.
I'm such a fan.
He's also a location manager in film, and he is currently working on the Dolomite movie. Yes. So we will be talking about Michael McDonald and Dolomite. thank you for letting me promote that. All right, hey, if you like what you're hearing, leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts. Y'all, 5-star reviews get a shout out on the show. Look at this. Let's start off with this one here. The Rogue Molly says, this show is literally, quote, what's good. Thanks, April, Alonzo, Ricky, and rotating crew of interesting guest hosts for being consistently the best podcast in my feed. The sincerity, the knowledge, and genuine love of the medium, and the joyful camaraderie. Hashtag squad goals for sure. Maybe one day I'll be cool enough to watch a single one of April's picks. Ooh.
That was me. That was when I was laughing. I read ahead, and I was like, what? You are already cool enough to watch those. I mean, what did I? I've recommended like slasher movies.
Like my female friends who listen to this show, they all are like, "Is April and cool as cool in person, Ricky, as she sounds?" I shit
she's
you
pretty
not.
Uptight.
I'm like,
she's a nightmare.
She comes in a little stressed, but outside of that, she's dope. She's dope, y'all.
As long as we don't look directly at her, it's okay.
But you have fans out there, April, in my crew. They love you. They love
hello,
you.
Hello, Ricky's crew.
Who wants to read, Alonzo? You want to read this next one?
Sure. Sail Above This says, do you find yourself rolling your eyes as straight white men habitually fall into conversations of worshiping Star Wars and Marvel DC movies? Then look no further, because this is the podcast you've been craving. As a busy student filmmaker, it's sometimes hard to find time to keep up with everything in theaters. That's why I rely on the ladies, gays, and POC of Who Shot Ya to help me decide between movies I should watch or not waste my money on. I enjoy Ricky, April, and Alonzo's great chemistry and ability to make each other laugh. More importantly, they aren't afraid to disagree and openly discuss their opinions without trying to be right. They are all clearly knowledgeable within their own fields, and it's such a pleasure to hear their different perspectives. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh.
I although think I'm right.
Also, I'm always right.
I'm willing to change my mind.
Bless.
I think I'll be reading this one from DKK. Says, I was a huge fan of Ricky Carmona when Wham Bam Pow days. He is bon vivant, best friend, and coolness guru of my dreams. Oh, whoa. Ricky!
Whoa.
Ricky!
Bong, 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 bong! Yeah. Shout out to the RZA.
So I was ready to fall in love with Who Shot Ya. I could not have imagined how much the show would affect me every week. The insightful commentary from witty and urbane guests always draws me in and makes me think more deeply about the way I feel, the way I do about movies. Having Ricky be joined by two such extraordinary co-hosts makes it even better. Woo! How could anyone not enjoy April's wry and occasionally dour view on the world around her? Well, I definitely delivered tonight. And we know the world has earned it. But she keeps pushing through and being brilliant as she goes. Thank you. Then we also have Alonzo. This man knocks me out every episode and has turned me into a linoleum knife listener as well for more of his sass, intelligence, and hilarious commentary, which I think we've seen quite a few people migrate over there as well. He is smart and down to earth, and my wife is endlessly delighted by my celebrity crush on him. Don't worry, I have one on Dave White, too. So it's all even. The show is not to be missed. Thank you so much, yay. DKK.
Thank you. Woo. Thank you, everybody. Those were dope. And thank you again to everybody who came out to our live show. Hopefully we will get to do that again.
Yes, let's.
You know, yeah.
I hope we do.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Shout out to the Dynasty Typewriter Theater for having us as well.
Yeah. Lovely. Yes.
Really good people.
Big ups to Jamie Flam and Vanessa. Thank you so much. Hey, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet us at WhoShotYaPod. Send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. And you know what? That is what's up.
You guys. You guys, we did it with just the three of us, and it wasn't awkward at all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.